You're listening to the Mind Made Wrong podcast, presented by Steel Maggie, episode number 8.
Hello, all my beautiful creators. It's Steel Maggie. I hope you're ready because we are in for another incredible discussion about mental health in the music industry. Today, my guest is so much more than a music entrepreneur. He's the founder of a thriving web-based music production company called The Songwriting Team, and he's a partner in the community Make Pop Music. I want to welcome Daniel Grimmett. How are you today, Daniel?
I'm doing well. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, I'm so excited. But before we get started, let's tell everyone where we can find you on social media and the internet.
Sure, absolutely. So pretty much everything's under my name except Instagram. Instagram is Dark Label Music. Grimmett.com, my name.com. That's the best way to find out what I got going on. And that links out to the YouTube and Facebook and all that stuff.
Fantastic. Okay. So the first thing I want to talk about, tell us a little bit about how you started your music career and how you made that big decision to just do music, because that's a big thing for all of us musicians, independence.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'd always played instruments growing up, played in bands as a teenager, did a little recording engineering as a teenager. It's technically my first little thing that I was doing on my own and charging, $20 or something to friends to come over and record. And when I was about 18, I got into the corporate world. Sales was something I was very good at and worked in various industries, real estate, advertising, things like that. Did that for about 6 years and decided that, at about 24 years old, I wanted to move to Los Angeles and start a production company. And kind of the ultimate goal was to be able to create jobs in an industry where there's not, where it's hard to find a job, right? So I moved out there and technically I was a producer for like the first year in the business, but it quickly got to the point where I was hiring other people. Again, that was kind of the goal for it. We grew it. It happened to be one of the fastest growing online music production companies at the time, and that was cool. And about 6 years into that, it inspired me to kind of keep the business running in the background, but dive a bit more into business consulting, helping other music producers become more business savvy and build their business out. And so I'm 31 now, so that kind of brings me to the current. That's the short version.
Wow. Okay. So that was the songwriting team.
Yes. The songwriting team was what was launched in Los Angeles. Yeah.
In Los Angeles, but now you're in North Carolina.
In North Carolina. Yeah. So I spent a couple years in Los Angeles, a couple years in Nashville, back in North Carolina. And then actually 2 weeks from now, I'll be back in Nashville. So
okay, wait, so you're moving back?
I am, yes.
My goodness. So what was, why North Carolina? What was there?
So I grew up here. It's where my family. We can get into this part of the story, but a theme of what I'll be discussing today is my battle with addiction. And fortunately, most of my life I've been sober. I had a slip up, and this was at the peak of when Songwriting Team was doing really well, which I think is a testament to like addiction doesn't care if you're doing good or bad. Well, we were actually doing great. It was at the peak of it. And I got complacent and wasn't doing, wasn't working on my mental health and said, "Hey, I'm going to have a drink." It was at a release, and that wasn't good. That spiraled down quickly. And in order to kind of, I didn't know what things were going to look like for me. So in order to spare the reputation of my business partners at the time, who were in Nashville, I moved back to North Carolina. I had places in both Nashville and North Carolina. And I just permanently kind of, I came back to North Carolina and the drinking got bad and I just never went back for 2 years or so. So that's kind of what brought me back. Wasn't under circumstances, but
right.
North Carolina is where I grew up.
So. Substance abuse and mental health go completely hand in hand. That is where I come from. I completely see, I know exactly what's going on there. First, just real quick, why Nashville now? I mean, of course, it's a music hub.
Yeah, I love it. I love Nashville. I love here in Charlotte. Charlotte's great. I loved LA. A part of it is just like some timing things like happened where like mm-hmm. some opportunities came up and then a place came up. My old business partner that I was just referring to actually moved to LA. So he has a real nice place out there and it became available. And that was a time sensitive decision. And at the point with the consulting business where I need to hire a couple of people and, the people that I'm looking at live in Nashville. So it just kind of made sense to go back. I wasn't ready to leave. I literally left as, insurance against the reputation of all of us. So I didn't, completed what I went there to do. Just on top of that, like every couple of years, I, get kind of bored and want to, move around and,
experience. Hey, that's the way things are heading. I think so. And you also get different ideas from different places and different groups of people. I'm reading this book called Friend of a Friend by David Burkus, and he talks about, the hazards of working in silos and not moving around when you have just this super core group of people that you work with, there's less innovation there to be had. So there's definitely something to be said for location, moving around, and location-based collaboration. So that's something for me to think about because I've been in the same place my entire life. I'm already learning. So cool. I wanted to talk about, it's a complete switch. Was there ever a moment in your life when you felt or believed your mind was made wrong?
I think the first time that I had a weird childhood. It was like a lot of juxtaposition. On one hand, it was amazing. I grew up in a great neighborhood with, kind of lower middle class, but had a lot of friends and great parents. I mean, they eventually got divorced, but even through that, great parents. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And supportive parents and had a really good childhood. Unfortunately, in the background, there was, some abuse going on. So it's just this big juxtaposition of like a really great childhood blended with, the worst thing that can happen to a kid, But it didn't, as it does for a lot of people, didn't really screw with me until I was probably around 14. And like, it didn't really bother, at the time I thought it was just what people did. Right. But when I got to 14 and started, having feelings for people, right. That time of your life.
Yeah.
The way that I immediately moved into like, self-medication and just the way I treated people in relationships, like relationships got way too serious for like a 14-year-old,
Yeah. Way too soon. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like took that stuff like way seriously and just like, wasn't like a good person in that, because I was modeling it after something, all that I knew at that point. So that's probably I actually remember like, sitting in art class. I was a freshman in high school. And I think that was the first time I like asked myself, like, what's wrong with me? Something's not right. So yeah, I was pretty young and I didn't really start working on it until I was 18. So it was a solid 4 years of, again, juxtaposition, a lot of fun as a teenager, like got crazy stories for days and I wouldn't change that. But on the other hand, just the darkness of it that was going on at the same time too. So yeah, does that answer the question?
Yes. Yes, it really does. I want to go a little bit more into what were some of the thoughts about the events that happened to you, because this podcast is a lot about mindset. And when we think certain thoughts about our circumstances, we feel certain things, and then we do certain actions, and then we achieve certain results, whether they're good or bad. So I want to hear your thoughts about yourself that may not have been the right ones to choose, but you really had no idea, right, about those events.
Yeah, so because of what happened to me as a kid, I went like complete opposite and was like, well, that's never going, you know, no one's ever going to have control over me again. So yeah. Then I'm controlling, right? So I'm in the, you know, I'm a kid, I'm 14 years old, 15 years old, in these massively controlling relationships where I'm controlling the other person, you know, and it's just weird. Like, my parents are like, what's going on? You know, the people I was dating, their parents are like, this is not normal, right? For a kid, like, you know, just have fun and go to the movies, right? Like everyone else. And I just didn't do that. Like I said, I took it like really seriously. I was addicted to people and I wanted to control them because I thought if I controlled them, you know, then I wouldn't get hurt. Like, you know, because I was completely out of control when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. You know, I had no control in that situation. This is all in hindsight too. Of course,
during
that I didn't, you know, again, I was like, oh, not everyone acts this way. And I think just because of that, obviously when you have expectations on people and you're trying to control them and they don't do what you do, it pisses you off. And then there's anger. And my anger was never really outward anger. Thank God, you know, cause I would have definitely hurt someone. My anger was always very internal. So then to counteract that, that's kind of where the substance abuse came
mm-hmm.
from.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, spun out of control quick. So it was like, my mindset was just, I just didn't even want to think, you know?
Ooh, okay, yes. I'm on that. I'm on that. I know that. Did you think that it seems that you thought that by controlling other people, that's what I'm hearing from you, controlling other people or the way they felt, the way that you thought they felt about you would give you a little bit more control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or just make me feel better.
Yes. And then the substance abuse comes in. Did you feel like you were that anger? Did you feel like you were angry at yourself in any way?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was always more internal than external.
Yes. Yeah.
It wasn't really ever like violent or like blew up on people. You know, I had like a lot of not a lot of friends, but I knew friends like growing up that they would like yell at their parents and freak out and like get in fights with their parents. I was never that. Mine was definitely more internal. So I'd say it's probably more mad at myself, you know, and that just comes along with like the normal territory of abuse. It's like, you know, mm-hmm. you immediately go into it's my fault, right?
And then
you're mad at them. And you're mad at yourself for letting it happen, even though, you know, and then you're kind of mad at your parents for letting it happen, even though they didn't know any better. And, you know, it was in the 90s, right? So, like, running around free all the time. But yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, primarily inward, I'd say.
Trauma is a brain killer, for sure. I think, you know, you can tell yourself, you know, anything that you like, but in the end, you can't, I think the big thing is that you can't, especially when you're a kid, you can't change, you know, what happened to you, but, you know, your kid brain is trying to, at least that's what it seems. It's trying to, you know, make sense of it. And the only place to turn is inward and then outward by acting out.
Yeah.
So I really hear you there. I want to fast forward to what is the most significant struggle you face when it comes to your own mental health and working in the industry today?
Sure. Yeah. I'll do a stepping stone to get there because there
is. Yes, please.
Just on that note.
Yes. Yes.
because something, you know, radical had to happen. So 18, when I became an adult, something kind of flipped in my brain. And like, okay, this isn't like, I can't live this way. You know, like this isn't good. I'm going to go on to, you know, just not be a good person. Right. Like either commit crime or, you know, it's just down the path of like, not, you know, I dropped out of high school. I couldn't get through high school because of the drugs. When I was 18, I went to rehab a couple of times, and the third one stuck, and I went to a trauma treatment center in Arizona for 3 months after the initial inpatient. So the inpatient was to get you off the stuff, and the 3 months was to kind of deal with the underlying issues. And that was an intense experience because I was around a lot of people who waited, and I was the youngest person to ever get accepted into this program. And it was everyone from like people whose, you know, parents died in 9/11 to just like, you know, extreme cases of depression and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And these are 30, 40, 50 year old people that waited to deal with it. And, you know, and I'm 18, and having to grow up that quick at 18 and go through that kind of work, that even 30 and 40 year olds struggle to go, you know, to do, completely changed my life. So, you know, that's when I got sober and, sort of that. So I just wanted to bring that up. That's like the pivotal point of when things changed for me.
Completely.
It was important for me too, because just like, and that's gonna, as I tell the story, becomes one of my driving factors. Because like statistically, things just weren't supposed to be good for me. You know what I mean? Like, you know, with the stuff that happens as a child, drug abuse, high school dropout, you know, it's just statistically, it's not good, right? Mm-hmm. People that fall into that same bracket in their adult life, generally don't, unfortunately, get to make a life that they want for themselves. So I was really fortunate that I was able to get that help at such a young age, and get me into that. So of course, that's why I started working, getting it through kind of everything into work. I happened to, like I said earlier, just be good at sales and sales jobs you don't really need a degree for or anything. So it just made the most sense. My dad was in sales. It kind of ran in the family. So I dived full into work, and I'd say the biggest sort of the reason that I bring all that up is because I feel like a lot of my problems now are so small in comparison to that, you know, stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good thing, right? Because I kind of set the bar low. anything now is kind of like, I mean, obviously I had, you know, obviously it's after 10 years sober, I relapsed for a year and a half. So obviously things weren't going well at that point. And again, that was at the peak of my business. And I think honestly, like I just stopped. I think my biggest issue is keeping the maintenance. You know, I stopped doing the things I'm supposed to do. And I'm really fortunate. I mean, one of my biggest drivers for being successful at business, any business, whether it's music or anything else, is, as you know, and as most people know, getting help for mental health is very expensive.
Yep.
I'm fortunate that that's the case. Maybe at some point I can maybe try to help with that, but it's expensive. So like for me, it's kind of life and death. I have to be successful because the meds I'm on cost a lot of money. I want to see the best psychiatrist. I want to be able to see my therapist often. If I need to just stop work and go to I haven't had to do this, but if I needed to go to like some wellness retreat for a month, I want to be able to afford to do that, you know? Because if I can't afford those things, I'm a miserable person. So like, to me, it's like, I have to be successful because if I don't, then I can't afford to keep myself well. With that said, I don't want that to discourage people that, you know, aren't in that position.
That's, you're talking to me right now. I'm like, I can't, I'm literally, I need therapy like crazy right now. And I can't afford it. you know, I can afford my generic medications, and that's about it. But yeah. I'm not taking it as discouraging at all. It's a motivator for sure.
Yeah, hopefully it's seen that way. So there is going to be that uncomfortable period, you know? But you know, I'm glad you can get the meds at least. Cause as you know, I'm a big proponent for medication. Because it, you know, I don't know if your situation's like this, but like, you know, all this stuff is great, right? Exercise, take care of yourself. All those things are good, but without the medication, I'm not getting out of bed. It's just not going to happen.
No. Like I'm
not going to feed myself. It's like you can't even get the energy to do the shit that you need to do to help, right? So I'm a big proponent of that, at least for me. And yeah, fortunately, there's some programs like state cards and stuff that help you get discounts on medication. I don't know who pays for them, but sometimes they just have them at the pharmacy. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah, definitely. I'm still on my parents' insurance, which is actually going to end in July. So that's something that I may use that resource. Thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, I still use it. It would bring medications from like $50 down to 10. And I don't know what, I just literally picked up a card and they typed a little number in. And I'm like, is this a real thing? They're like, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. I don't know who's paying for it. I have no clue.
How long have you been... can I ask, how long have you been on medication and have you had any problems with taking it regularly?
Oh yeah, definitely. I've totally done the thing where you start to feel good and you stop.
That's me every few months.
Oh man, why do we do that?
I don't know. I think for me, it's the bipolar where it's, when I'm manic, I don't feel like I need it. And then my entire life will go to shit periodically because I will make stupid decisions because I wasn't taking meds for no reason. It's like, this is helping me. I forget that it helps me. You know, I need like this like big sign, like floating sign in front of my face every single day that says like, hey, take your meds. And I've done it. I've put backgrounds on my phone and then I just start to ignore them after a while.
Right.
I don't know what it is. Do you have experience with something that works?
I don't. I've done it too. So I have the same thing as you. So I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's specific to that condition. I don't know. Yeah, just like the prescription run out, I'll get lazy, you know, like, I don't know, I guess I have no good excuse for it. But yes, I've been on medicine since I was 18.
Okay. Yeah.
Before that, my own medicine. But
I wasn't
doctor medicine since 18. And yeah, it's a process, of course, of like finding, I didn't really get like a good combo until like maybe 3 years ago.
It is all about the cocktail. It really is. I wasn't diagnosed until 2016. So that I did a lot of really dumb things and was really terrible, you know, did dumb things, just stupid things. And the meds like really have helped me. But it's about the regularity. I want to know, first, are you type one or type two?
Two.
Okay. I mean, I'm grateful that I'm not type one, but I definitely see how there's a lot, there's definitely like obviously a difference, but, certain things like they can definitely cross over into like, I've been on that line. Can you talk about how, what that diagnosis was like for you? Cause for me, it felt like every single thing in my life had been explained absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, definitely. They were like kind of on the fence of like kind of what it was. Cause mine was like, yeah, no, not even to the line of one ever. Mine was more like apathy. It was like, I'd be really into stuff. I could build, you know, big company. And then I just stopped caring. And like, I just didn't care about anything. So it was less of the like happy, sad stuff. And it was more like I'm just really high performing. And then I just go into this like recluse, like don't care about anything, like not sadness necessarily, like, but just apathy. Yeah, so that's kind of what they determined that to be.
That's definitely a depressive episode, even though depression doesn't show up as like crying most of the time.
Right.
Or like right. Sadness. It shows up as reclusivity. I don't know if that's a word, but it shows up as shutting yourself out most of the time in isolation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like unfortunate because it's like literally like there's like one instant cure for it for me. And it's okay. Like one thing that will kill me, you know? So like that's where the addiction part. So, you know, like when I take a drink, it instantly cures that feeling. Immediately.
Oh, I know.
That's what's so difficult about it.
I know.
Because like when I get that way, it's like I can literally cure this right now for $5, you know, and right up at the supermarket.
Oh yeah.
And it starts that downward spiral of to where it doesn't work anymore, you know, a couple weeks in, and then it amplifies everything, the stress, the anxiety, it flips on you, it turns on you.
Especially if you make stupid decisions, then you're like just racked with like guilt and like just like confusion about what you did.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yes. Do you feel like, cause I'll take, even when I'm taking meds, like I'll sometimes still make that decision to drink a little bit more than I should. Do you, I mean, I know cause you've been sober, but do you have any, experience with the combination of those?
Not really. When okay, I would go,
yeah. Yeah, so you've been sober for so long.
Well yeah, I mean yeah, so from 18 to 28
right
I was sober, and that's when I didn't start doing meds until or taking meds until 18, so I was sober for that whole time. And then the one year that I kind of relapsed, I stopped taking meds.
So I want to go into that period. What was the catalyst of your relapse?
It's a good question, because everything was pretty good at the time.
Well, that can be a catalyst.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, like with addiction, it's ongoing work, you know? Yeah. It's like on top of just the day-to-day stuff of running a business, it's like I have to also, you know, every day consciously make the decision to not, you know, poison myself, right? And that piece has to come first. But that part's not as fun as the business part, right? So they say a lot of times, like, you show signs and you kind of lead up to a relapse and you start thinking about it, and then all of a sudden you kind of cave in. It was not like that at all. I didn't think about it at all. And then I got to an event. I checked in at a hotel, and it just hit me. I'm like, I'm gonna have a drink. I'm gonna walk down to the bar and have one. And you know, I had a couple, didn't really do anything. And then just throughout the night, kept going, and there I was. So I think the catalyst was just not doing maintenance. You know, I wasn't doing the stuff I was supposed to do.
It's a mental maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mental maintenance. You cannot let yourself fall back into that. And I'm completely guilty of it. I get that, where it's like, I'll be there and I'll be like, yeah, this, I don't feel anything. I don't feel anything, you know? And it's like, and then I'm on like the floor, you know? So, or just saying really dumb things, and I can't stop myself. Like, I just can't like stop. Like I can see myself kind of doing it, but it's like, this feels good. This is great. This is awesome. This is what I wanted. And then it like, it really isn't. I completely see that. It's a mental, you're saying it's the mental maintenance. What are some things that you think about today, or some thought patterns that maybe are keeping you on the straight and narrow, so to speak?
I don't want to die.
Yes.
You know, that's a good one. Yeah. I mean, I do a morning, you know, routine that's, you know, for mental health and mindset, and a piece of it's business, obviously.
Yeah.
I have my clients do, and it, you know, it sounds kind of woo woo in the beginning, but like you have a lot of control over what your mind can do, you know? And like things like gratitude, all that stuff is practice, you know? If you never think about it, then like you're probably not going to feel it. If you remind yourself it exists every morning, then it's going to start having an effect, you know? So yeah, just things like that. And just the main thing, like, I know what happens when I don't do it. And it's not just losing a business. It means death to me. And I don't want to die. So that's the main, the main thing.
I got you. I feel that. I'm so into this. This is like really speaking to me. I'm into it. So you say that you have a routines. And that's one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about is self-care can be so, like, you know, like you said, woo-woo. But I really don't think that it is. I think that, like, we equate it with bath bombs and essential oil, you know, that kind of thing. But it's a mental thing. So can you talk about what that means to you? And I want to hear a little bit more about these routines that you have and these gratitudes.
Yes, there's a couple like pieces to it. You know, with the addiction stuff, it's like, you know, I'm in AA, so, you know, there's things that we have to, you know, we don't have to do it, but that are recommended, you know, going to meetings. And so it's part mental, but it's actually physical. You got to show up, you know, you got to pick up the phone and call. You have to like do these things, work steps, make amends, you know, go through the process over and over and over and over again. So like there's that piece. And then on the other side, kind of the day-to-day in the business, it's just like modeling after people that, like, the reason I tell my guys that we do this, my clients, I'm like, successful people just do different shit. Like their days look different than yours. You literally can copy, you can download that into your day. You know, there's going to be some stuff that like they're doing that you can't do because they're just on a different level. But like, there is a lot that you can.
Waking up at 5 a.m. Yeah, not for me.
Why would we not like model what successful people are doing? So like, dude, this industry is not just this industry, but like everything's hard, but you know, it's tough, man. Right. So like, if you're not, it's like, it'd be like a boxer going into a fight without like doing any preparation or training, you know, like if I go into my work, like, which is to help others, you know, in the consulting and to, you know, do my own thing as well, run my business without any preparation for the day. If I don't go in there like a warrior, like I'm going to get my ass kicked because everything is against, you know, everything's against you. The odds are against you. Other people think that what you're doing is bullshit, you know, dealing with other people's mindsets, crossing over into your space, like, and being able to kind of protect yourself from that so you can help them better. Like, dude, I'd get my ass kicked if I didn't like come in every day as best I can, a warrior. And the only way I know how to do that is to take an hour every day and remind myself, you know, that I'm good at what I do. I read through client testimonials. I try to buy insurance against those feelings that we feel throughout the day, self-doubt, imposter syndrome, all that stuff. I just try to knock that shit out first thing in the morning, you know? And then I wrap it up with just remembering that, like, hey, you have to make this work, man. Like, it is life or death. Because you know if you don't make it work, you're going to get bummed about it. You're going to get bummed about it. You're going to start drinking. You're going to do something stupid, and you're going to die. It's literally, it sounds dramatic, but to me, it is life or death.
That's your why. That's your compelling reason.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fighting against the statistics.
Especially for your life, you know, that is what's relevant to you with the history and all of that we talked about.
Yeah, and it's just not that far away from me. Like,
it's not. No, it's literally a drink away.
Yep, 100%. Exactly what you said. Like that one year I went back out, I was immediately that statistic. Immediately. Burned through all the money, brought the company to the ground, was drinking from sunup to sundown. You know, luckily had a friend that took me in. I literally crashed everything I built in 6 years to the ground. In 1 year, I became the statistic. Once it was out of my system, boom, we built it all back up again. So like that's a pretty clear indicator to not fuck with that stuff, right? So I have to do whatever, you know, is necessary to make sure that I go into every day. Like, if some of my business mentor says, the reason that it's important to do some kind of morning formula, morning ritual, if you just go, like, think about it. Sometimes you wake up and you feel good, right? Sometimes you wake up and you feel bad, right? Like, mm-hmm. if you just let it go by chance, you're screwed.
Your day is by chance.
You're essentially going into the day just like there's a 50% chance it'll be a good or bad day. Like, that's not high enough odds for me. So
you got to design it. Mm-hmm. My goodness.
Not perfect, but it's like better than nothing, you know? It's better than the 50-50. If you can bump it to, you know, 70-30, 70% being a good day, 30% of them being kind of rough, that's better than just going by chance.
Is realizing, I think, that you do have the control, and you have to have the control. No one else is going to do it for you, I think.
Yep.
Yeah. No one's going to put your eyes on the paper to do the gratitudes. No one's going to do that for you. I want to know, from your perspective as a music freelancer, is what I know you were on John's podcast, and that was an amazing episode about your freelance career. I want to talk about what you see as the biggest pain point for musicians and creatives' mental health right now. And this is two-parter. If you could fix that crisis with one sentence, what would it be? It's a loaded question. So if I need to repeat it, let me know.
And I know you sent me the questions beforehand too. And I actually, in this case, decided not to like prepare any answers because I thought it just may be more interesting that way. But yeah, those are good questions. Are you asking what I think the cause is, or what I just notice? Like,
seems it can be either or. What it can be the I guess what you notice first, and then that one sentence could be how to root out the cause.
Yeah, I think overall the biggest thing is like lack of confidence.
Hmm. Okay.
That's like what I deal with day to day with my clients, is like lack of confidence. Everyone thinks it's know-how, you know? They're like, Dan, just tell me what to do. And I'm like, well, that's the thing. Like, that's how I know you're not cut out for it yet. Like, a business mind will figure that out, right?
Yes.
They don't have, like, the and then I tell them some stuff like, oh, yeah, no, I definitely figure that's what I should do. I'm like, well, do it. That's the difference. Like, a confidence person has already done it, you know? So I think confidence, man, is a big one. I don't know what causes. I think
self-esteem and lack of self-love. Is that
different reasons for different people? You know, I think, yeah, like when I feel that, because I'm obviously not immune to it. When I feel that way, yeah, I'm sure a lot of it stems from, like, I don't think that much of it has to do with the music industry. It has to do, you know, it just stems from, like, just my particular story. It could stem from a million different things from that. So I think the reason's probably different for everybody, but just a consistent thing is like confidence. You know, how to fix that? All I can do is like affect the people who I come across, you know, and who I do my work with. But as far as everything as a whole, I don't know that there's something that's going to fit, you know, just not everybody's going to be that, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. just not how the world works. Like, not everyone's going to be like that confident person. Like, everyone has the opportunity to, and for some, it'll be harder to get there. And some people have it a bit more naturally. But yeah, the reality is that not everyone is going to figure that out, you know? So I don't know how to change that as a whole. There's definitely, if someone's interested in doing it, there's absolutely things that they can explore. You know, there's people that's literally their job, except when their self-esteem so low, you're probably scrolling through and you see like a Facebook ad for like someone talking about confidence, and your initial gut reaction, because you're in such a toxic headspace, you're like, oh, fuck them, probably a scam. You know, it's like, no, there's actually people that are really good at it. You know, like, I've always had, you know, mindset coaches, business mentors, therapists. Like, I don't know how people could do shit without that at some point.
Okay. Can we talk about that? So mindset, people who actually coach mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the same as having a personal trainer. It's like, it's a muscle, right? So it's the same as having a personal
trainer. Absolutely.
Right? So yeah, like what my, the business mentors that I use, have like 3 or 4 dedicated people. That's all they do.
Okay.
Just mindset coaches. Because most people don't have the business they want because they're not the level of person that can either handle or deserve that level of business yet.
Yeah. You have to be a certain like person in order to achieve that.
You have to be like, think about like an Olympic athlete. This is the comparison I always use. You already have to be an Olympic level athlete to even walk onto the field and have a chance to win the medal.
Yeah.
You already have to be a champion to even have the chance. And business is the same way, you know?
And the mindset coaching would help with that. Who are, that's one of my questions is who are some of the influences that you have? And I think maybe telling us about some of these people, if they have, you know, businesses that would be available to us to take resource from.
Yeah, absolutely. So my business coaches are two guys, Chris Evans and Taylor Welch, and they own a consulting firm based in Nashville. I think there's about 50 to 60 employees, and they service a couple thousand businesses. So it's a cool, real cool business that they have going. Like I said, they have mindset coaches. That's all their job is, right? And then they have like a different guy who like helps with ads, and like a different guy that helps with your offer, and you know, so they have different people based on what your problem is. But so them, you know, that's kind of who I work with. There's a ton of I'm a Gary Vee fan. I know a lot of people aren't.
he talks so fast. Like that's my only beef with him. And it's like, can you talk like 2 times more?
Yeah. And it can come off as cheesy, but I absolutely fall into that, like that gratitude camp, man. Cause it's just like, and, I mean, like to me, like I don't look at the music industry as a cause of my mental illness. The music industry for me is the reason I can fucking take care of my mental illness. It affords me the luxury to do so, you know? So you know, I tend to, there's a lot I don't like roll with them on, but anything that comes to mindset, I do tend to roll with him on. Tom Ballou, who owns Impact Theory. It's like a YouTube channel. He was one of the,
I've heard of that.
He was one of the co-founders of Quest Nutrition, those really good little low carb bars.
Uh-huh.
Then they sold it for a bunch of money, and now he does, you know, has a YouTube channel. And he has a lot of good mindset stuff himself and his guests. His guests seem to be pretty mindset focused. Yeah, there's a ton.
Wow. Because when I go through and get this all edited, I always like go through and I take notes. I've got to do that. There's someone that I listen to regularly. Her name is Brooke Castillo, and she's a life coach, and she has a podcast, and she's definitely all about the mindset and about being, you have to be the person that you want to become in order to have the success. And I really think that you brought that to the light. You have to pursue that, and you have to become that person deliberately, or else that those opportunities are not going to be available for you. They're only going to be available to the person who is that person, which is kind of like a mind fuck.
Yeah. And the best indicator is of whether or not you're that person yet, if you've done it. Yeah. It's the same thing. Like when I get to the, you know, like when I'm talking to a producer and I get to the end, you know, I'm like, well, so what do you think stopping you from doing this on your own? Like what's, you know, let's say I didn't exist. Like what's the plan? Like what's stopping you from, oh, I just don't know like what to do, or I need like a plan, you know? And I tell them, I'm like, I know you think it's knowledge that you need, but like the knowledge is out there. Wouldn't you agree? Like there's a ton of free shit on YouTube.
You can search anything on Google.
yeah, I know. I'm like, so why didn't you just watch those videos and build a business? That's what I did. I didn't have that when I started a business. Me and everyone else for the past 100 years before YouTube existed.
You didn't have you to start your business.
Yeah, so I told him, I'm like, the problem isn't that you lack the knowledge. It's that you are just not the level of business person that you need to be in order to reach the goal. And the reason I know is because if you were that, you'd already reached the goal. That's the indicator that you're there, right? So it's a humbling conversation. But yeah, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. There's goals I have, and I know that the reason I'm not at those goals is because I myself am not the person that is qualified to hit those goals yet.
How do you? I guess is it a matter of just do it then, or is it that simple? Like, you know, I was gonna ask like, how do you become that person? But is it? It seems like it's a just do it thing. Like, just become the person. You know.
Yeah, I
mean, step by step.
Action is part of it, but yeah, I mean, it's a process to become it, right? So it's like one is like going through the trial and error. At the same time, I'm like peeling layers of myself back to try to like, you know, get to the best version of me that I can and try to peel the negative shit off or however you want to look at it. Like that just takes time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I won't be able to just like do that tomorrow. The just do it part is still important. You got to show up and do it. But, yeah, literally I'm just not there yet. Like there's some way that I'm thinking that happens all the time. Like when I talk to my mindset coach, I'll be like, yeah, well, here's why I think it's broken, you know? And he's like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, you made that up. And I'm like, oh shit, I guess I did. You know, like yeah. There's stuff I don't even realize that I'm thinking wrong yet. And that's just a process of learning it. And that's extremely difficult to do. And that's why most people don't build a successful business. It's a very hard process to do. And that's why I hire people to help me.
Cause you're like, just give me the right thought and I'll think it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it.
Yep. 100%. It's like, well, why would you, they kind of walk you through it. And then like at the end of it, you're like, oh yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know why I think that.
You're like, obviously.
You actually take action in the reverse, you know, like, cool. Well, you're not going to do that anymore. From now on, like, you know, this is what you charge, or this is what your morning looks like, or this is, you know, how you talk to someone, you know? So it's like they figure out what the problem is and then they correct it immediately. And it's just all these old micro things. And then after a while you're like, fuck, my business is doing good, or shit, I feel really good. It's just a process, you know?
I'm getting so much. I'm getting so much. So I really want to be respectful of your time. Thank you so much for being on this podcast, Mind Made Wrong. I have one more question for you, and it is, how have you created beautiful things in 2019, and what are your plans to continue to create beautiful things? The beautiful things is my tagline at the end. So I want to tie it all in.
Yeah. How I've done it is again, a key theme here in the last half of the conversation.
Yeah.
Asking for help, whether that be mental health or business, right? Like literally people think when you build something or like create something, not that I'm some big shit or anything, but like when you create anything at any level, there's always going to be people that look up and say, oh wow, you did all this. Like, congrats to you. And it's like, dude, I ask for the most help out of everybody. That's the only difference. So I would attribute the beautiful things that I create, I guess, to the people who help me to do that.
Whoa.
How I'm going to continue it in this year is, like I said, moving and hiring some people and passing that forward and creating some jobs. And then just compound effect, you know?
Continuing to ask for that help. Because you know you can't do it alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. I absolutely love that. That's a total game changer, because we're so like precious about asking for help. And it's like, oh, I don't want to seem like I don't know what I'm doing in this area, when it's totally true that you may possibly not know what you're doing. And what is the pretense for? we're all independent at this point, most of us. I love that. Ask for, be the one who asked for help the most. That's the quote. That's the quote right there.
when clients sign on with me and they're like, "Hey Dan, like, what can I do to get the most out of working with you?" And I tell them, ask for the most help. Like, my guys who do the best are the ones who ask for more help most often. Like, it would appear that they would be doing the worst, right? Because they're always like, "Help me, I have a question, help." It appears that they would be doing the worst. They're actually the best performers. They get the best results.
It's one of those counterintuitive things.
It's the ones who get, and I get it, and it's my job to help so that they don't get demotivated. I don't ever blame the client for that. I have to figure out why this is happening. But, you know, it's human nature for, you know, if something isn't working out, we stop asking for help. We don't want to bother the other person. We kind of recluse, you know, and that's the absolute worst thing someone can do if they are trying to, you know, keep the inertia to move forward.
It's a momentum killer for sure. Is that maybe that pride and that ego? Mm-hmm. I'm guessing.
Yeah,
you just need to uproot by changing that mindset. Thank you so much. This has been so incredibly valuable. I know everyone listening is just reeling from the value bombs that you just dropped on us. I am. I'm gonna take copious notes. This is so incredible. I want to have you remind us all again where we can find you.
Yeah,
if we want to learn more, if we want to kind of maybe check into the songwriting team and see what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, so the production company, I don't know if I didn't mention that at the beginning. So the production company still runs. That's songwritingteam.com. Mm-hmm. My main stuff that I do nowadays is the consulting on Instagram. It's at Dark Label Music.
Dark Label Music.
Yep, and danielgrimmett.com, which links to videos and all that sorts of stuff.
I'll have to follow you. I'll have to find you. I think that's why I couldn't find you, is because you were Dark Label Music on Instagram.
The one separate thing.
I was like, where is this guy? since I'm pretty much all up on Instagram. Instagram is bae. Thank you so much for listening with me. This has been Daniel Grimmett. Next week, I have a very special episode with just me. Please come hang out on the podcast next Friday, because I do not want you to miss this. But until then, let's go create beautiful things. Bye-bye.